They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hello, welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies. Gosh, it's hard to think of, right, funny, self-deprecating things to say about this podcast week in, week out. We suck, haha.
Good one.
I'm sucker number one, Elliot. I'm joined by sucker number two, Nathan. Or Nathan, if you want to be sucker number one, you can be. I'm not bothered about it. Nathan, Alien Earth has had its day. It's said its piece, and now it's off to the big leathery egg in the sky. And I have to say, on the whole, I'm pretty disappointed.
Dang.
I know that there was a time where it managed to pull off a coup and bring me back.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but the stuff that had me invested was all kind of unrealized things that I kind of assumed would continue to grow and gestate within the chest of the show's potential and then explode out as the proverbial chest burster of quality.
Wow. You gotta get a job with the Rolling Stone or something. What a poetic review.
Yeah. But the long story short, they don't. And in fact, that character that I kept on mentioning, right, who was so good and was like the best thing about the show, he kind of ends up relegated to the background for the latter half of the show.
Hmm.
And just the last episode I would describe as anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Right. First of all, my worst fears about the Xenomorph were realized, that we are invited to sympathize with it to a certain degree. We are exploring the extent of its cognition. Basically doing everything that I do not want to do regarding the Xenomorph.
Yeah.
And also the entire plot of the last episode. And this is not a spoiler. Is predicated on a power that the main character has that she's had throughout the whole show, and it is just never explained. Like, they just could not be bothered to come up with a reason for why this person has this power. So, I don't think I need to explain to you why that is extremely unsatisfying to have the main character win because they've got a special godlike power that they just haven't explained. And apparently, I did not know this. And in fact, I'm so uncertain about this. Let me just fact check myself before I even say. Yeah, it does look like the show that I thought this show was like a limited series. But apparently they were jockeying for a second season, which hasn't been confirmed yet, but it is something that they wanted, and that explains everything about the way this finale is handled. Dang. Why it's why there's no resolution, why nothing is explained. So I don't know. I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves here, but Breaking Bad set itself up for multiple seasons while still resolving major conflicts and feeling like each season had a satisfying arc.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, not what I was hoping for. Certainly not the news that I wanted to give to you guys, you fellas and ladies, after having been surprised to get drawn back in to the show.
That's too bad. And that's that sounds a lot like the things that perennially annoy me about watching modern television.
Perennially.
Is that it, what?
Perennially.
Whatever.
It's not whatever.
Is actually. That it feels like they're always more interested in perpetuating their show more than genuinely telling an interesting story. Which I think is a really frustrating way to watch television. Especially when a lot of these shows don't even end up getting as many seasons or episodes as the creators think they need to tell the story. And so we end up with half-baked shows with non-endings.
I don't know. I don't think I watch enough TV to know if that's true or not. This is clearly a point in your favor.
Well, I guess this kind of flips to the other banter thing. I will, before we go to this thing, I forgot to mention last week, a screen legend passed away last week, Robert Redford, one of the most famous actors, for sure, of, you know, the 70s, and then managed to flip that into a very influential directing career that had a fair number of accolades. Probably Ordinary People was his most successful movie. It won Best Picture and also won a place in my heart, as well as Quiz Show, a later movie that he made that was also very, very excellent. He also did a lot for the film Community. You might have heard of the Sundance Film Festival, which was the brainchild, which I believe was created by him, taking its name from his classic character in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He also, one of my favorite little tidbits, is in the Watchmen TV show, right? Because I don't think in the comic book he's president.
No, in the comic book it's
it's still Nixon.
It's Nixon, yeah.
But in the TV show, Robert Redford becomes a three-term president, which I've never seen the Watchmen TV show. I refuse to because I love the comic book so much, and everything I've seen about the show seems like it would really annoy me. But I think that decision is both really funny and, you know, really in keeping with the universe of Watchmen. So, rest in peace, Robert Redford. The other piece that I was going to talk about in terms of TV shows with non-endings and unsatisfying storylines. The next Star Wars movie received a trailer this week to, I don't know if you could even call it the least amount of excitement I've ever seen, maybe for anything that's like a major studio property. Everyone said the trailer looks like a TV movie. It looks like those awful Ewok movies that they made after Return of the Jedi. And I have to say, I agree with them. Nothing about this trailer got me excited for the movie. Nothing about the trailer made me think that Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni are going to do something really exciting and creative with the new, presumably higher amount of money that they got for this as a movie instead of a TV show. There's just nothing in here that really gets me excited for the next stage of Star Wars that Disney is kind of fumbling around to try to create.
Well, you're not going to have to convince me, a seasoned Star Wars hater at this point. I thought the trailer looked like a trailer for season 4 of Mandalorian, which this basically is.
Yeah.
And yeah, the reaction, the crowd has gone mild and no one really cares.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, look, I like hating things. I don't like hating things. Derive a certain level of petty satisfaction out of hating things. But, I mean, I understand Mandalorian felt like for Mandalorian season 1 and season 2, this show was kind of seen as the, I don't know, the template for Disney Star Wars. This was seen as the good thing. And now that Andor has come over and eaten the Mandalorian's lunch so thoroughly that the Mandalorian is just going to go hungry for the rest. I mean, how can you watch this show, Andor, that's intelligent and mature and thought-provoking, and then watch the guy in the funny costume shoot the pew-pew guns with his pet stuffed animal? I don't know. Yeah. I certainly would struggle with that.
Yeah. Well, I will say, they did also unveil recently the first image of the other Star Wars movie that's currently in development, Star Wars Starfighter. With Ryan Gosling, and I am excited for this one. I think we need more original stories that are distinctly unconnected to anything else in the Star Wars universe. I think we need more interesting directors. Not that necessarily I think Sean Levy is like one of the greats or something, that he's going to deliver something like Irvin Kershner gave us with Empire Strikes Back, but I think that is much more exciting to me than seeing Dave Filoni continue to bafflingly work around this weird story that leads nowhere that he's trying to build with like 8 different shows across 12 or 15 seasons of TV. So, yeah. But I think speaking of, this is a beautiful segue, speaking of movies.
Sean Levy directed Night at the Museum. It's crazy. I love that movie as a child.
Yeah, that's a classic of our childhood. Speaking of movies that serve as bookends to TV shows, Elliot.
Wow. How about that?
So convenient. It's like we, you know, it's just how we wrote it up in practice. Elliot, what are we talking about today? You know, what's the subject?
Nathan, today we are talking about El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, which is the full title.
Yeah.
This is a 2019 movie directed by Vince Gilligan, creator and showrunner and writer of Breaking Bad and parts of Better Call Saul. I think he left after a few seasons and then came back to do season 6. But he's the father of this universe. And before we had The Many Saints of Newark, we had another TV movie based on a prestige TV show in El Camino. And I surely that's not a coincidence. Many Saints of Newark, David Cage saw that and he was like, oh, I want to do that. And that's how that movie ended up happening. We're not here to talk about Many Saints of Newark. This movie provides a kind of narrative coda to the primary story of Breaking Bad, that being the rise and fall of Walter White, drug kingpin, high school chemistry teacher, turned drug kingpin, and his partner, Jesse Pinkman. Of course, Jesse Pinkman had a very ambiguous ending in the TV show, and this movie fleshes that out and shows us, it concludes his story, basically.
Yeah.
And this movie was by no means hated. It's one of those situations where it's got like a 90 or 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, but the average rating is like a 6.9 or something.
Yeah, sure.
No one's willing to say that it's bad, or no one thinks that it's bad, but it's no one is saying that this is at the same level of Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. And obviously, it's hard if you're positioned between two stratospheric peaks. Anything is going to look like a valley. Let me tell you, I was so excited for this movie. I love Breaking Bad. It's my favorite show of all time. Better Call Saul, fantastic. These are both 11 out of 10 A++ masterpieces.
Wow.
That I have a very fond affection for. Better Call Saul, in the era of streaming, right, Better Call Saul was released on a network television channel on AMC. Yeah. So I was there staying up on, I can't remember, I think it was like Thursday nights to watch Better Call Saul. And this movie came out, I think, towards the end of Better Call Saul's run. All of this is to say that I was on tenterhooks for this movie. I watched all the trailers. I read all the interviews. I watched this movie, I think, the night that it came out.
Yeah.
And then I never watched it again. Sure. I didn't think it was bad. I pretty much was with the consensus that I was like, this is clearly the work of a man who is used to having, right, 10 or 12 hours worth of story to work with. And this movie's like 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
And then, basically, I'm rewatching Better Call Saul right now. So I'm kind of in a Breaking Bad mood. And I thought to myself, let's give El Camino another look. And let's see how that first watch holds up. So I'm going to hold off on my opening thoughts. Nathan, I'm very interested to hear from you. So if you could please tell us a little bit about your history with this movie and, you know, and also throw in a little bit about your feelings towards the show from which it is spawned.
Well, the first thing I have to say is, despite my brother's repeated pleas and effusive praise poured on this show, I have never watched Better Call Saul. Whoops. I just increasingly don't have...
Blah, blah, blah.
I don't have time to watch, wait, 7 seasons of like 20...
6 seasons.
A lot of TV for... And I've always struggled with watching hour-long TV shows that have episodes that are an hour long, just because an hour feels like so much time to dedicate to things that then don't have a resolution, which... Some people are like, that's insane. But these are the same people who tell me I could never watch a 3-hour movie, and then they sit and binge watch The Office for 4 hours. So I think, you know, different people just gravitate towards different modes of storytelling. So I haven't watched Better Call Saul. I have watched Breaking Bad. I watched it in high school, kind of right when it got added to Netflix, I'm pretty sure is when I watched it. And I really liked it. I'm not going to sit on here and be a contrarian and say, actually, it sucks. I will say, I think 11 out of 10 is a little high for me, because there are portions of this show that I think go nowhere and serve no function and are just, if I were to rewatch the show, I think every time Maria showed up, I would be like, oh, good grief. Why? Why is this character in the show? But anyway, I believe I watched El Camino with you, Elliot, the night it came out. I also I guess 2019 would be a little after I would have watched Breaking Bad, but I was still very much, I enjoyed the show. I was invested in this. I remember seeing the earliest like leaks of Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston in costume on the set of things, and people saying, oh my goodness, Breaking Bad has been so good for Netflix, they're paying to make a movie about Jesse Pinkman after his escape in the finale of Breaking Bad. And so I remember watching it, I remember enjoying it, and I think honestly my first thoughts are basically the same as I've seen a lot of people say. This movie is not bad by any stretch of the imagination. It just feels deeply unnecessary and at times a little fan service-y in a way that is kind of weird with how grounded and realistic everything in the TV show Breaking Bad is. It feels weird to go from that to a movie that kind of feels like it's constantly winking at the audience instead of really telling a super compelling and airtight story.
What a consistent disappointment you are. I actually liked this a lot more than I did on the first watch.
Wow.
And I will say, right, again, I'm a Breaking Bad fan, Better Call Saul fan. That I'm not going to pretend like that is not, that has nothing to do with my appreciation for this movie. Yeah, I guess it's hard to explain because I feel like someone comes, let's first of all say there is no way on earth that you could watch this movie having never seen anything from Breaking Bad and enjoy it to any great extent.
No.
This is not a standalone movie. This is a sequel, or I guess more like an epilogue, to Breaking Bad. It leverages characters and moments, and if you don't have any understanding of that, none of this is going to make sense. It's all going to fall flat on its face. So I think we all, surely we can all acknowledge that this movie doesn't, this movie doesn't need to stand on its own. Or I think this movie doesn't necessarily need to be, what am I saying? This movie doesn't need to be good to people who have never watched Breaking Bad because it is part of Breaking Bad. So it is kind of like saying that, right, oh, I watched episode 6 of Breaking Bad season 4 having never seen any of the show, and it sucked. I hated it. I didn't understand what was going on. Well, like, right, this is, you're coming in at the tail end of a very long story, so I would feel happy defending it from that position, although I do acknowledge, I don't want to say that this movie reaches the heights of Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. I think that it would, in a ranking, for most people, for me as with most people, it would probably come in third. Because I think that the flashbacks are not, this movie makes heavy use of flashbacks, and they're not always artfully inserted. And the antagonist, the movie lacks a strong antagonist in the way that Breaking Bad had Gus, or Better Call Saul had Lalo Salamanca, right? Breaking Bad has a tradition of really strong antagonists that are interesting in their own right and really serve to move the story along. Don't have that here. But on the whole, yeah, I found myself just kind of swept up in it, being back with these characters. So yeah, that's a lot of rambling. Probably doesn't make any sense to anyone except me. So let's just get started. Nathan, I want to dig in a little bit to that unnecessary part because I was planning on asking a question that you have now actually answered. The question being, do you think that this movie's existence is kind of a problem to begin with? Because I know that there was and is a subset of people who appreciated the way the open-ended end that Jesse Pinkman got in the show, didn't think that it was needed to go back and explain what ended up happening to him. You've kind of already shown your colors here, but do you want to elaborate a little bit on the unnecessary component of your opening thoughts?
Yeah, I think a part of it is I would definitely be in the camp that I love the final moments with Jesse in the Breaking Bad season finale. I think the final image of him just starting to scream as he's driving away in this car is such a potently emotional moment, especially given, I don't know if there's anyone who's had a tougher time in the show than Jesse. This guy got put through the ringer so many times. He spends 5 seasons being gaslit by like the worst person imaginable, and then he ends up, right, he's captured by white supremacists, and he's tortured, and he just a horrible, horrible time. And so I found this final moment, while it is a little ambiguous, I don't think most of us believed that anything was going to happen other than Jesse escaped to some sort of normal life and hopefully entered, you know, some sort of therapy or joined a church where he could get some, you know, pastor privilege to share his story and work through some of the things he's been through. But I loved that ending, and I guess I can kind of see why people might want this coda, because definitely, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't rewatched Breaking Bad since I watched it for the first time, but Jesse Pinkman does, of all of the main characters of Breaking Bad, well, and this is kind of true, I guess, of everyone who's not Walter White, that they all kind of fade into the background in the run-up to the series finale, that they all become secondary to getting Walter White to the final moments in the season, in the show. And so I can understand people wanting a bit more time with Jesse, that they want to see him kind of come through some of the things. Like I said, he gets put through the ringer, so wanting to see a definitive happy ending for him is something that I can very much understand, and this movie delivers on it, obviously. I think if you're watching this expecting Jesse to be, like, gunned down by the police in the street, that's insane. That would be a crazy thing for Vince Gilligan to do. But I just think, I guess, and it's tough because I always take issue with people saying, oh, this movie's unnecessary. Like, yeah, all art is unnecessary, because that's part of what makes it neat, is that a human being thought it would be cool to show other people a story or tell a, you know, tale to other people. I think that's what makes art special, is that it's not necessary in a literal, like, you need food to survive sort of way. But I think the question that more came to my mind is, does this movie justify, like, if someone was saying, should I watch El Camino? You're more likely to say, well, you should watch Breaking Bad, and then if you really like it, you should watch El Camino too. It's not quite the same as, I could definitely see someone saying, like, oh, Avengers Endgame is amazing, but you need to watch, right, the rest of the MCU to watch it. And they would say, don't just watch it because that stuff's good. Although surely if they love Endgame, they would say that stuff is good. But they would also say it's good because the payoff is incredible. Like, getting to watch this final thing is amazing. I don't know of anyone who would say that about El Camino, where they're like, this is so good, it justifies watching all of this other stuff. Even if you don't like that stuff, the payoff's amazing. And El Camino just kind of feels like, you know, more of a shrug, like, yeah, if you're really into it, then yeah, you'd enjoy it.
That's an interesting metaphor.
I just want to compare you to an MCU fanboy so I can belittle your opinion and position.
Very professional.
Just.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you don't like... I can't imagine a world where a, right, 20th or 30th installment of a series is so good, is not only so good that it justifies getting through the previous 29 installments that you don't like or are not good, or, right, a 30th installment bucking a 29 installment trend of being bad and suddenly being good. So I'm not 100% sure what this is, what I'm supposed to take from that. I guess I come back to, it doesn't really matter if it stands on its own or not, because like any installment in a series, right, it's part of a larger whole. So, right, you're hand doesn't stand on its own as a person. That's because it's part of a larger whole. So you need the whole context.
Wow.
But I guess it doesn't really matter. We probably should not spend a whole lot of time talking about stuff around the movie. We should talk about the movie itself.
Yeah.
I think this time around, I was able to appreciate more. For some reason, the flashbacks really loomed large in my mind. When I was sitting down to watch this, I was thinking, like, man, I remember liking Jesse's story, but I remember just so many flashbacks. And there are definitely more flashbacks than average, but the bulk of them concern this little episode that Jesse had with Todd, Jesse Plemons' colorful character.
Yeah, I did want to ask, do you think in a show full of, like, dirtbags and scumbags, is Todd the worst person in Breaking Bad?
I don't know. Lalo Salamanca, you obviously wouldn't know this, but he does have a reputation among fans of the universe for being, like, the most evil antagonist.
Okay.
But Todd is definitely up there. Like, this, something is not right with this guy. The point is that most of the flashbacks are there to, and I think these flashbacks are definitely my least favorite, because their purpose is really just to set up money. The money that Todd had that Jesse needs in order to make good his escape. The other flashbacks, like with the one with Walter White or the one with Mike, they're more about teasing out these different aspects of Jesse's character, wanting to make things right, wanting to start over, having spent, right, 2 years with this immensely charismatic but deeply manipulative and evil person. These flashbacks feel a lot more functional, because without them, they're really just there to establish this goal for Jesse in the first, like, third of the movie. Because the movie isn't super concerned about Jesse's trauma from having spent, right, 6 months or so caged by a bunch of white supremacists, or his relationship with Todd, or anything like that. It's just kind of there so that we know, so that we understand what Jesse is looking for, and it doesn't seem like a butt pull on behalf of the director, Vince Gilligan. Where am I even going with this?
I don't know, but this is interesting, because I think I completely disagree with you that I like the flashbacks with Todd, and all of the other flashbacks feel really unnecessary to me. That I feel like the stuff with Todd represents, to me at least, the only kind of relevant character arc that exists in this movie for Jesse, right? That in these flashbacks with Todd, we see him unable to, for whatever reason, kill Todd and escape the, you know, the situation that he's in, that presumably it would not be very difficult for him to shoot Todd, take the car, drive away, and escape. But there's something psychological that keeps him from doing this, that then, right, comes back to be the opposite at the end of the movie, where he is able to kill someone in order to accomplish his goal of escaping. And so I liked the stuff with Todd because it felt like it did a lot to create the character arc that's present in this movie that I appreciated, compared to some of the, I agree, I think the flashback with Mike is pretty decent and does a good job of kind of setting up Jesse's character. I think the final flashback,
plus it's very brief.
Yes, super brief. The final flashback with him and Jane, I think, is really good, where she says, it's a terrible philosophy to let the universe choose for you, like, you have to choose. Which, again, feels to me like it ties to this whole thing, and maybe Jesse's entire character arc in Breaking Bad as a whole, that he hasn't really ever forged his own path, and so this movie represents his choice to do that. Some of these other flashbacks, though, the one where the guy has, like, welded his track that he's going to be stuck on while he's making meth for the people, that feels way too long, and I feel like it's way better to allude to the terrible things that was done to him as opposed to this extended sequence where it's really trying to hammer home these people are terrible. And then the other one is, I don't like the flashback with him and Walter. That it feels like it does more to continue to drive home the point that Walter White was a megalomaniac and a narcissist more than it does anything to tell me anything about Jesse. As well as it doesn't help that knowing that it's a bald cap and Bryan Cranston is not bald, that tracking shot where it's like pause for clapping, kind of like Spider-Man No Way Home, the entire time I was just like, dang, his forehead looks huge, bro. That's gigantic. He looks like Megamind out here.
Wow, there's so much there. that is so much there. Forehead joke. I guess I understand what you're saying about the flashbacks with Todd. That does, I guess, improve them a little bit in my eyes. I guess I probably would have understood that with fewer of them. Yeah. And it feels like in the beginning, especially, we're needing to really ramp up momentum, and these flashbacks in the beginning, right, we're kind of like evenly split between time spent with Jesse in the now and time spent in these flashbacks with Todd. So I guess the balance just feels a little bit off for me. Yeah. I definitely agree. Neil is probably the worst part of this movie for me. Neil being the antagonist.
The villain, yeah.
Yeah. And that flashback, I definitely think is purely functional to get us on board with Jesse killing this dude for monetary gain. I guess the thinking being without this flashback or without this prior connection that Jesse had to this man, we would just think, wow, he's like murdering someone in cold blood here. And he's a criminal, right? But so is Jesse. And in this universe, being a criminal, right, there's all kinds of criminals with hearts of gold, yeah. Or at least complicated hearts. I am not going to sit here and pretend that there is no element of fan service present in the flashback with Jesse and Walter. But I do think, because this is the conclusion to Jesse's story, and because Jesse's story is so bound up with Walter White, I do think that not having, because Jesse never really addresses Walter in the movie. This is the only hint of their relationship that we have throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like it would be a little weird to not have something like this in a movie that is concluding Jesse's story, because Jesse's story is also Walter's story to a certain extent. And I do think that it serves to demonstrate, it serves, at least for me, a nice contrast between this very childish, showy, brash version of Jesse and the more mature, restrained Jesse that we have here in the movie. And again, this goes back to this movie being an installment in the Breaking Bad universe, because, right, without, if you don't have that context, this contrast, it's going to be pretty meaningless, because it's just, right, 3 minutes of Jesse being brash compared to 2 hours of Jesse being fairly composed.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess I think that it is leveraging Breaking Bad and the story that was told there to bring this contrast home, especially since it comes near the end of the movie. Doesn't it happen like...
It's, what? Yeah, it's right
before
the last...
he blows up the thing, the warehouse, something like that.
Yeah, it might be somewhere in there. Yeah, it's right before he blows up the warehouse. So it's right after he's killed the two people and taken the money.
Yeah, and if you read interviews like I did in the lead up to this movie, Vince Gilligan talked about his vision for this movie being Jesse kind of becoming a man here. And I think that this flashback showing him, right, rewinding almost, I think, to season two or maybe later parts of season one of Breaking Bad to show Jesse as a child right after he has come into his own and done this thing on his own, stolen the money and killed this guy. It does kind of add a nice little capstone to that journey of boy to man, at least for me, right? This is just my experience of it. And again, I love Breaking Bad, so I can't deny that that is part of what's going on here.
Yeah. Well, and I think I've been very negative on the movie, but I do think there's some decent moments to be had here that I think obviously the side characters in Breaking Bad are almost universally fantastic. And so getting to see a lot of those side characters is part of the fun of this movie. I love Ed, the make you disappear guy. I think he's
great. The disappearer.
Great. Yeah, the disappearer. Badger and Skinny Pete are just the best. And I think that moment with Skinny Pete and Jesse where he's like, you're my hero, man. You, like, I just think you're the great, you're the best. I think is really great, is a really great moment. And yeah, Todd is just such a horrible, horrible human being. And I love Jesse Plemons when he plays scumbags. Him, when the semi-truck passes him and he signals for like a like a honk and then he's disappointed. Gosh, that's so... He's such a terrible person. This is the year. This is Begonia is going to be Jesse Plemons. He's finally going to win, maybe. He's got to team up with a director other than Yorgos Lanthimos. I don't think he's ever going to win Best Actor with Yorgos. He's got to hop, jump ship. Go to Martin Scorsese, go to, you know, Christopher Nolan.
He's already been in a Scorsese movie.
I know, but he was only in it for like 2 minutes.
That's true.
Which is tough because he plays basically the protagonist of the book. Like in the book, that's the main dude. And Scorsese was like, he's too good of a person, so I have to make it about someone who's a worse person.
Yeah, that's Scorsese's whole... Yeah. That explains Scorsese's whole oeuvre, except for Silence. I agree. Jesse Plemons is great, and Todd is scary. There's a lot of moments in the movie that are callbacks to the show that don't make sense without your knowledge of the show. So when it's revealed that Todd has kept that tarantula from the boy he killed in, I think it was season 5.
Yep.
That was pretty chilling to me. And it definitely served to enhance the impact of Jesse neglecting or failing to kill Todd after they had buried the woman in wherever that place is.
Yeah.
And I think in general, I like the closure that we get from this movie. I love that section with Jesse and Badger and Skinny Pete. Badger and Pete, they're so endearing. They make such a great odd couple. And yeah, it's very, it just, it warms the old heart to hear Skinny Pete say, "You're my hero and stuff, man."
Yeah.
I also liked, and I'm interested to get your take on this. I liked Jesse's, not really reconciliation, but the conclusion to his relationship with his parents, which was a minor thread throughout the show. And I think that there's definitely, it could be read as him just, because he calls his parents to say he's at some place that they can come get him and take eyes off of their house, because obviously their house is being watched by police. So it could be read as him just acting, but I did feel like there was more to him saying, "It wasn't your fault. It was the way I turned out has nothing to do with you. It was on me," because that does connect with this theme of making your own choices, like Jane said in her flashback, that it's better to make your own choices. And it seems like that's Jesse embodying that philosophy of making your own choices. So, but what did you think about the stuff with Jesse and his parents? Because you don't have the same... Well, I'll just shut up, me. Let Nathan talk.
No, I definitely agree. I think it's a decent moment. I am struggling to think of how many interactions he has with his parents in the TV show. The only one that's really coming to mind is when he buys their house from them and is like, "Get out of my house, you." But I do think I would agree with your assessment of this moment, that it is Jesse trying to take some more ownership of what he's doing. It also sets up, I would say, the only classic Breaking Bad bit that this movie has, which is him bringing two guns to the Western shootout at the end. I think Breaking Bad is full of these. It's like the golden child of Chekhov's gun. There's so many Chekhov's guns throughout the series, some of them being literal guns, some of them being cigarettes and all these other different sorts of things. But I think this is the only classic moment of Breaking Bad ingenuity of writing a difficult to solve situation and coming up with a very satisfying and clever solution to said situation. I also think this Western shootout at the end is just a great scene in general. I agree that this villain is not as cool or scary as any of the other villains that the series has had, but this final moment of a Western shootout, all of Breaking Bad has felt very Western tinged, so having a literal Western shootout at kind of the very end, not the very end, because I think Better Call Saul goes further into the future than this movie, but having this be kind of a coda, I think, is really great, and it's just a great, well-done scene.
Yeah, I agree. Did Jesse know that Neil was going to challenge him to a quick draw duel? Was that his thinking the whole time? Or maybe he just thought, right, I'll keep their eyes on this, my grandfather's, I don't know, Luger or something. And then no one will know. When I start pointing my jacket pocket at them, they'll just be like, "What a weird kid."
Yeah.
And then die.
That's what I assumed, is that he brought both guns so as to always have an ace in the hole, so to speak. An ace up his sleeve.
You know, it's funny. That guy, the, like, enormous guy who's, I guess, the pimp for these escorts, you know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
That's actually a reference to Better Call Saul, because he's in the show, and he gets scared of Mike when Mike does the thing where everyone underestimates him because he's old, and he just kicks butt.
Yeah. I did wonder, because when I was looking at the trivia for this movie, and it says how the only characters to show up in all three of the Breaking Bad franchises, and it was like, obviously, Walter, Jesse, Ed, someone else who I was like, oh, I'm not sure who that is. But then there was also an Austin. Who on earth is Austin?
I guess I would have to hear the last name.
It was, because it was, I guess Mike is also in all three. And then it was like Austin Lacey or something like that.
I don't know. I'll cut this, don't worry. One of the woman standing, and the guy who's giving the press conference about Walter White's last shootout, there's a woman standing next to him. I don't remember if she's in Breaking Bad, but she's definitely in Better Call Saul, because she's one of the attorneys. I thought it was funny that they got her to do like a 3-second non-speaking cameo. But it's a tight crew over there at the Breaking Bad universe.
Yeah, Walter White, Jesse Pinkman, Mike Ehrmantraut, Ed Galbraith, and Austin Ramey.
I don't know. Maybe that is
Maybe that is that dude person. Yeah.
I mean, although I don't know. I don't remember him being in Breaking Bad.
Well, I assumed it was just a character that I don't remember. But anyway, do you have any other kind of closing thoughts and opinions as we start heading towards ratings here?
I just want to shout out Aaron Paul. Fantastic performance. It seems like the most obvious thing in the world to say, but this is great work from him. I love how committed Jesse is to street talk. Like when he says, when he's getting tied up by Neil and his lackey, and he says, "How about some handcuffs, yo?" I thought that was funny. Who in that situation would be tacking on the "yo"? But Jesse, I mean, Jesse says "yo" a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. Breaking Bad has always looked fantastic. Cinematography. I don't know how to describe it, but it has a very distinctive look, and I think it's retained here. Just very sharp and clean, despite Breaking Bad being a very gritty, occasionally quite grimy universe to inhabit. I guess... Are you satisfied with where Jesse ends up? Do you find this a satisfying ending to his story, driving off, not necessarily having solved all of his problems or overcome all of his trauma, but at peace, content to a certain extent, and restarting his life, having said goodbye to everyone, including Brock? Poor Brock doesn't even know why his mother was murdered. Do you find this like last? Well, yeah, I've already asked the question. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think it's really good. Like I said at the beginning, I think Jesse Pinkman is the most deserving character, maybe in the history of fiction, of a happy ending. He's got to be up there. And so I think this is a really great ending for him, getting certainty that he is going to a place where, yeah, hopefully he can put together all of the pieces of his life into something meaningful. And I think the movie does a decent job of setting up, right, the cost of this, that it took a lot for him to get to this point. But I think it, yeah, is very satisfying. I enjoy it. I think it's great.
Well, I don't think I have anything else to say. It feels like this movie, despite being 2 hours long, because of the way Vince Gilligan structures his stories, they are not, despite coming from TV shows mainly, they are not very episodic. They typically have like one or two strong primary threads that are woven throughout the entire thing, so there's not a lot of sidebars or side quests or anything like that. All of it's very purposeful, which I always appreciate, and I think that's one of the things that makes this universe so good. But it also does, it means that once you've addressed those threads, it's not a whole lot else to talk about.
Yeah, it's not a sprawling, it's not like Game of Thrones, where it's a sprawling story with so many different pieces and nooks and crannies that you can investigate.
No, although Better Call Saul actually does end up as a fairly sprawling epic saga, because it ends up being a prequel not just for Saul, but also for Gus and Mike, and of course all of the new characters that were introduced. It's insane that you haven't watched Better Call Saul. It's so good.
I don't have the time to do these sorts of things.
Well, I don't either. I just neglect my other responsibilities.
This is just like when I went golfing most recently with my dad, I said how much I wanted to get better at golf. And he said if I started neglecting my wife, I could probably get a lot better at golf. So,
I don't have a wife, but I, instead of doing my homework, I watch episodes of Better Call Saul, and then an hour before I have class, I'm like,
wow.
Can you hear me tapping at my
keyboard? I did, yeah, that was very funny. Anyway, let's get to ratings here.
Let's do it.
My rating is, I think this is a classic sort of, I think I've been saying that with a lot of my ratings recently. I think this is an archetypal.
There you go.
7.5 movie. I think it's good. It's enjoyable. Certainly if you've watched Breaking Bad, this is a good coda to that series. But I don't think, like I said, right, I don't think it would justify, you would be insane to think that this justifies watching all of Breaking Bad. And
yeah, okay, I don't understand. You should watch Breaking Bad for Breaking Bad's sake, not for El Camino.
I'm just saying some installments justify watching earlier installments, and some installments it's just like, yeah, they're like all so decent.
Like what?
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't say you should watch all of Star Wars to watch Rogue One, but I think Rogue One is better having watched all of Star Wars.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
You think people should watch all of Star Wars to watch Rogue One?
No, I think Rogue One stands on its own pretty well.
All right. But anyway, yeah, it's a good show. I would echo the things that you said about Aaron Paul, fantastic actor, and the cinematography is really neat. A lot of neat little shots in here.
Neato. All right. Well, I enjoy this movie. I absolutely recognize that it is not essential to the narrative of Breaking Bad. It's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. I think I said the exact same thing Nathan said. But yeah, I like this movie. I think if you've watched Breaking Bad and somehow didn't watch this movie, maybe that says something about the way you feel about Breaking Bad. But if you like Breaking Bad and haven't watched this movie, I think it is absolutely worth it. I'm going to give it a B+.
All right, well, now we get to recommendations. Elliot, from talking to you beforehand, it sounds like your recommendation is maybe going in a different direction than my recommendation, which I'm just going to recommend the Ben Affleck crime movie, The Town, which I think if you like well put together plots, if you like crime movies about criminals with a bit of a heart of gold who you'd really just like to see escape criminality and find happiness or something, I think The Town is a great example. I think it's a really solid movie. A lot of people I've seen compare it to Heat. I don't like Heat, so I think this is a great option. It's also not 3 hours long like Heat is, so a lot to love here. Ben Affleck, kind of a surprisingly good director. This is one of those movies about Boston from people who lived in Boston that really make you think, dang, I don't ever want to live in Boston. Good grief. But it's a lot of fun. It's got a lot of great characters, a lot of really good side characters, and just a really well put together sort of movie. Very well made.
You think anyone feels about Des Moines the way people feel about like New York or Boston or LA?
I can't imagine who that would be. Who would feel that way?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know anyone who, I live in Kansas City right now. I don't know anyone who's like, oh, I love this city. The city is in my blood. It's my heritage. That's interesting. I did not know you have seen that movie. I don't remember enjoying it that much. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I don't know. I can't second that recommendation as of right now, but I'm not going to warn anyone off of it. My recommendation has actually changed while we were talking.
Wow.
And I am going to recommend Hell or High Water.
Oh.
I'm recommending this for the... If you like neo-westerns...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Hell or High Water is a neo-westerns neo-western.
Yeah.
If you like Breaking Bad and... El Camino for the complex, conflicted characters. You absolutely have that in Hell or High Water. If you like Breaking Bad for its gritty portrayal of crime and its unromantic portrayal of violence, I think Hell or High Water is going to serve you very well. I think that there's a lot of thematic and stylistic connective tissue between these two universes, and Hell or High Water is just a fantastic movie. We've done a review for it. Go ahead and listen to it.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation, Elliot. Yeah, very good movie there. I had some other snide comment to make that I can't remember now.
I think you've filled your quota at this point. I'm going to sneak in one last night comment of my own and say that life is hard and full of disappointments.
Of course. Thank you so much for listening. If you have watched Breaking Bad, if you're a huge fan, send us an email about your thoughts. Do you think El Camino is a vital part of the Breaking Bad universe, or do you think it's more of a forgettable afterthought? Send us an email. We love getting emails. We're going to be back next week. We're going to be reviewing another brand new movie. Super excited for that.
Or an old movie.
It could be anything, I guess. But, thanks for listening. Have a great week. We'll see you then.